Hello, and welcome to Learning for Life at Gustavus, the podcast about people teaching and learning at Gustavus Adolphus College, and the myriad ways that Gustavus liberal arts education provides a lasting foundation for lives of fulfillment and purpose. I'm your host, Greg Castor, faculty member in the Department of History. For Minnesota Timberwolves fans, of which I am only one in the loosest sense of the word, the 2021-22 season was both cause for celebration and disappointment. While the Wolves had a winning season, a rarity the past 15 years, and made the playoffs, they lost to the Memphis Grizzlies 2-4 in round one. With the season over and the 2022 NBA draft just 10 days away on June 23rd, I thought it'd be both interesting and fun to speak with someone who follows the team closely and has lots to say about them. Dane Moore graduated from Gustavus in 2012 with a major in financial economics and a minor in English, and experience as the sports editor for the Gustavian Weekly, the campus student newspaper. He hosts the popular Dane Moore's NBA podcast on Blue Wire, which was brought to my attention recently by a friend and Wolves fan who enjoys listening to it, and which features interviews with experts and commentators on the team and league. It's at once informative, insightful, provocative, and funny. I'm delighted Dane could take time away from his own podcast to join me on this one to talk about not only the Timberwolves, but also his own story, including his path to Gustavus and from there to his current work. So, Dane, welcome. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, Greg, man. Thanks for having me.
Excited You're quite welcome.
To chat.
It's June 13. What is it? June 14. It's going to be hot as hell. It's already heating up, so I hope you're in air conditioning as I am. We were talking before we started recording. We didn't really cross paths when you were a student at Gustavus, but good to meet you this way and learn a bit more about you. Let's start with me stipulating, as I was saying right before we started, that I know virtually nothing about the Timberwolves, certainly compared to you. I want them to win. I grew up in Chicago. And so I was, remember being a fan of the Bulls. I guess I must have kind of grown up with the franchise when it was starting. Dick Motta was the coach and pre-Michael Jordan.
There you go.
Anyway, yeah. But, wherever I'm living, I want the teams to win. So I've not been to a Wolves game ever. I've been to one Lynx game only and just one professional basketball game. That was in Phoenix with my brother-in-law and his wife. Anyway.
Well, you haven't been missing much.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I gather. Because as I mentioned in emails to you, the guys I have breakfast with, boy, they were, I don't know. It's like Minnesota sports fans need grief counseling or something. It's amazing. We can get into that. But, with that said, let's start with you, your story. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up, for example.
I grew up in, Hopkins, Minnesota, just outside of the city. I think it's like an hour north of St. Peter. Wasn't a long commute to go off to college when I did, but yeah, Hopkins, played basketball there.
Oh, you did? I wondered about that.
There. Yeah. Okay. My whole life.
That was in high school. You were playing basketball or earlier as well?
Yeah. Yeah. All the way up, through high school and, I didn't play at Gustavus, but,
okay. What were your parents doing?
My mom was an early childhood family educator. So she worked like at a preschool. I always say she was a professional parent in that she taught parents how to parent which was great.
Important work. Yeah.
Yes. That's what my mom did. And then my dad, worked for like LifeSpring and did Pecos River and all. I don't know if you know those companies, but it's basically like kind of professionally teaching businesses how to run their business or how to work together in a professional, set. And that was kind of like in the 90s with that sort of time. And just kind of cultivating better business environments. So he was a speaker in that sort of way, leading those sort of things. So never really thought about that as a does that connect to what I
do? Well, it does actually, right? you're seeing it even as you tell about it. I mean, it clearly connects. What about, did either one of them go to Gustavus or anyone else in your family?
No, they're neither of them are even from Minnesota. So I kind of like learned that as I was like, it took a while to us in like high school or college to realize it's like weird if you're from Minnesota and your parents aren't.
Yeah.
My dad's from Seattle and my mom's from Chicago, actually.
Oh, my hometown.
As well. Exactly. Yeah. Chicago was where I spent a lot of time.
Okay. Having lived in Minnesota now 35 years, I realize I'll never be a Minnesotan, I guess. but I love Minnesota, you know, because I wasn't born here, not a native. What brought you to Gustavus?
Honestly, kind of weird story. 2008 was when I graduated high school, and 2008 is also when our economy kind of went bluey.
Right.
I was actually fully set to go to University of Oregon, had a roommate, had everything there. And, my loans were through the Fannie Mae Corporation, who also did housing loans.
Right.
And, those went away, last minute. And it was, you know, it was very expensive. I was going to be paying out of state tuition and all that. And without the student loans, it became something that I wasn't, you know, I couldn't just write a check for like 50 grand or whatever to go to Oregon. So, I was kind of like, it was weird in my senior year is this sort of like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the plan for, a couple months was I was going to do AmeriCorps.
Okay.
And,
sure.
And, I always wanted to get out of Minnesota for college. Yeah. And then he was like, I don't know, maybe I'll come back or something like that. But I really, when I was 18 years old, really wanted to get away and Oregon, wanted to do the whole big school thing. And then kind of in the process of this whole AmeriCorps thing, and I'm like, I always thought I was going to go to college. And through this like camp I went to in the summertime it was like a church camp. So it had like some Lutheran connection to Gustavus.
Uh-huh.
And I think somebody heard what was going on, and, you know, we were all just, it was just bad luck, you know, kind of this whole loan thing. And they're like, well, what if you went to Gustavus for a year? And like, that could kind of be like what you were going to be doing for AmeriCorps, but you're also getting, you know, some classes under your belt.
Right.
And so I was kind of like, yeah, that sounds better. And in all honesty, I kind of was going to view it as a, kind of like go for a year and then maybe transfer sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I went to Gustavus, and I don't think like academically I was hooked right away, but I really, I felt good about the people I was around.
Yeah. Everybody says that. Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah. And that would be as I reflect on it, my biggest thing. I mean, we'll talk, I did make some good academic connections and did some stuff with some professors there, like professionally, I guess. What I'm saying is what got me not to transfer was the people freshman year, and, you know, my roommate who's, you know, went on to be like the best man at his wedding and one of my best friends, you know, like those classic, sort of things. So
classic Gustavus story. First of all, as regular listeners know, I love, partly this is the historian in me, I guess. I just love all these contingencies, these, you know, what ifs, right? So what if 2008 hadn't happened? Who knows? We might not be talking, right? You might not be a Gusty. But there you are. That's cool. I like that it's someone was ready to sell you on the place. Had you heard of it? Were you aware of Gustavus before?
I mean, loosely.
Yeah, loosely.
Like, but I didn't have... I was oldest brother, so I hadn't like the whole like college thing was not only new to me, but new to my family, right? Yeah. My parents too, and kind of figuring it all out. But as one does, you kind of like, you're like, wait, is that different than St. Olaf, or is that the same thing? Like, you know, kind of lump them all together, the Mayak ones, until you experience them and figure out they're actually very different.
Exactly. But, I was the same way with the state schools in Illinois. I wound up going to Northern Illinois University, partly just because some friends were going to the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. I wanted to be different, you know, and it turned out it had a great history department, which I didn't know at the time. It's funny what motivates people to make college decisions. It's not always, first of all, it's not always as straightforward as people might think. And it's not always about academics. But nonetheless, you were lucky because Tavis has great academics as well. Sure. So were you planning to play? I assume you weren't planning to play basketball at Oregon, or were you?
No, I was. I knew I was. I mean, quite frankly, wasn't good enough.
Okay.
Definitely. I didn't even. I mean, my roommate at Gustavus played basketball, so I like played with him all the time and the other guys on the team. But I had kind of, again, because I wasn't good enough, had ruled out the idea of college basketball. I think maybe like in hindsight, I would have been like, oh, well, why don't you just try and be a guy who plays at the end of the bench or sits at the end of the bench, something like that. But right. I had a very good sports experience through high school, but I knew that it was not going to be, or I just kind of decided it was not going to be part of my, you know, my college experience, because I thought I was going to be going to a D1 school and certainly wouldn't be good enough to play there.
Right. What is it about basketball that attracted you and continues to attract you as a both as a player and as an observer, a writer about the sport?
I think it's culturally a very cool sport, and like the interaction of the parts on the floor, and you have to know the people you're with. I think that's a little less true. I also played baseball in high school, which was more individual. I didn't play football in high school, but I did, you know, growing up as a kid. And I always was very just attracted to the kind of the connection of five people on the floor. And there's like a beautiful thing about basketball is there's all this like unspoken eye contact stuff that happens that I think is just, you know, is really cool. Like I covered Tom Thibodeau for a while, and what he would always say when things weren't working, he said it's because we weren't playing on a string. Huh. And I do think when basketball is at its best and when it is working, it's playing on a string. And I think there's something really, you know, special about that, and special about the way it connects you to the people that you're playing with. And yeah, just made a bunch of like cool connections with people. I mean, one of the weirdest things is the Timberwolves just hired this, I mean, one of the top guys in the organization to be the chief experience officer. So he's like, I don't know what that title really means.
Is that Tim Connelly or
no? No, not Tim Connelly, okay. We'll but it's this guy who works laterally with Tim Connelly and the CEO, who has this like now super big position out of nowhere. And I find out, I'm like, oh, they hired this guy named Marquise Watts. And he was my basketball coach in high school.
Oh my gosh.
I played AAU for him. And it's just like, it's very bizarre. I mean, I'm 32 years old now. So long time ago that I was,
you're young.
Well, yeah, sure. But it's just, I mean, there's been a lot of like funny connections back to people who I either played with, played for, like, or a couple of like players who have been on the team I played against in AAU and stuff like that. I played like against Jeff Teague, who was on the Timberwolves a couple years ago. Some people maybe know him. So it's just like these weird connections that you would have, you wouldn't have thought anything of when you're like 16, 17 years old. And I'm like, wow, these are actually kind of pretty profound professional connections.
That's great. I'm going to make a connection here. It may seem like a bit of a leap, but to me, learning and also what makes life interesting are connections like that. Learning is about making connections, seeing patterns. I love people who know me well, students form. I love connecting people. You know, if I hear a student mention, well, I'm interested in this and I know someone, let's say someone wants to start a podcast. Like, well, you should talk to Dane Moore, you know, seriously. But yeah, that's cool. I don't watch the game a lot. I will confess. I used to watch it more when I went to graduate school at Boston University, and I did watch the Celtics. I watched basketball a lot more then. That was the last time I probably watched it a lot, but I like how fast the game is. Baseball, I can't watch. I mean, I grew up wanting the Cubs to win and loving Wrigley Field. I wasn't a Sox.
Hey, I'm a Cubs fan.
Oh, you are? Okay, there you go. Yeah. I haven't been
to
Wrigley
since the World Series.
Oh, really? Oh my gosh, I'm envious. Yeah, my cousin in Chicago, she and her family are White Sox fans, but I forgive them, and I think they forgive me. But I do like basketball. How fast it is. Anyway, I know hockey is fast too, but somehow basketball I find more interesting. We can get into that. So, what about the writing? I mean, because you know, how did you become sports editor of the Weekly?
Well, I don't know if that's totally accurate. I wrote some articles. I guess that made me an editor, but like I was mostly just a writer. I just wrote my senior year there. Honestly, kind of out of a little bit of boredom. I was pretty much done with like all of my, I had graduated financial economics as my major, and I finished pretty much all of that through my junior year. And I guess I didn't really want to leave my senior year. So like you said, I did an English minor. So kind of my whole like senior year, I was like, oh, I'm just going to do English stuff and writing stuff. Honestly, as a hobby, I did not think that that would go anywhere professionally, mostly because like I remember I had one teacher in high school who was like, well, you know, you're a good writer, but that'll never be that's not a career sort of thing. So that, I think that kind of steered me away from it.
Yeah,
that,
understandable.
You know, oh my gosh. Naive teenager, but
he was wrong, by the way. you can make a good living out of writing. But so had you done some writing as a kid or in high school at all? Any kind of sports writing or not?
Not really. I always just honestly just always enjoyed like journaling, mm-hmm. and those, you know, those sort of things. I was always very like, it's funny, this sounds really stupid, but like I always in my fantasy football league, mm-hmm. would always write these like weekly posts about our league and who was playing who and stuff like that. And my friends always seem to get such a kick out of it. And I kind of like with writing, I mean, there's a vanity to it,
yeah.
where, you know, it feels good to know that people are reading what
Absolutely.
You're writing,
yes.
and, you know, enjoying it. And that was like my first taste of that at like 15 years old and doing that. But
yeah.
I never really thought of any connection to doing it professionally. I was interested in working in sports from a young age, but that's also like dime a dozen, you know, it's like what, you know, what teenage kid doesn't want to like quote unquote work in sports. So I really had no idea of how or if I was going to be able to, you know, actually work in sports some way or how, but I knew it's something I wanted to do. But I always thought it was so cliche when people are like, oh, well, sports is my passion. I was like, well, I'm pretty sure sports is my passion, but I don't want to say that because it sounds cliche.
It does, right. It does sound cliche. Well, you're a writer. You're tuned to cliches. What were you connected especially to the Gustavus basketball team, given your love of basketball as a
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like I said, my roommate in college, he played for the basketball team, and that kind of ended up through him, you know, meeting other people that I was really close, like a lot of my closest friends played on the basketball team there. And then okay. I did when I was writing my senior year, I think you said you had Mark Hansen on,
right. Coach
on the
Hansen.
Show before.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I did interviewed him for a story on a, one of the players who was on the team.
Actually, wait a second. I think I read that story in preparing for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh
yeah.
My gosh. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That was your story.
Yeah.
So did you go to all the games? I mean, did you have to go to like the football games? How many different men's games, women's games? What do you do when you're writing?
I was pretty much just basketball.
Okay.
Because I don't know. I had some friends who played baseball. I went to a couple of those games. You know, that's like way far away in the field over there. And I was like a long walk over there. The basketball court was close.
What dorm were you in?
Oh man. So is it Norelius?
Norelius. Okay.
Was the one the freshman one. And
yeah.
then, what was the one right next to it, for sophomores?
Not co-ed. I don't remember what it is.
No, co-ed was Norelius was co-ed, right? And then,
you were close to you were close to Lund Center though. It sounds
exactly
like.
very close. Even walkable in the winter.
Yeah. 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 That's important. So I'd say it's interesting. Talk a little bit too about, you know, why you majored in economics, finance, and then minored in English, if you would. I mean, I'm always curious about students come to their majors? Sometimes people know. I mean, your dad had the business background, but go ahead. What brought you to those fields as a student at Gustavus?
I mean, I think it's kind of like with any student where you're going to college and you're kind of taking a guess of what your interest and skills are. I think actually more people at a liberal arts college like Gustavus kind of come in with a little bit more of an open mind than I did. Like, all right, freshman year, I'm going to kind of test the water and a couple of different things and be like, do I like this or do I like that? Like for me, I was like, I'm just all in, like, I'm just going to do all the business stuff and try and knock that out as, you know, as quick as I can. And like I was saying before, honestly, I thought I was going to be transferring. So I was like, which one of these courses transfer? Like macroeconomics, that'll work anywhere, you know? So
I see. Were you doing that route because you thought, well, this is the way to get a job, or I'm just really interested in business, or hard?
Yeah, I think so. At some point during college, the plan became law school.
Right. Cause you were in the pre-law. I saw that. Yeah. The pre-law club, right?
Yeah. So that was a focus. And I, again, pretty naively 18, 19 years old, I was like, okay, well, the best way into sports will be to, you know, become a lawyer and then I can become an agent. And I thought, you know, just the business background would help with the law school for, I don't even know if that actually is a thing or not, but that was kind of my thinking. Otherwise, just the idea that some sort of business background would be pretty applicable in a lot of different ways. I didn't have I didn't have an exact vision at all of what I wanted to be, you know, doing once I graduated.
Which is good.
At some point, it became law school.
I mean, I think again, this is a theme of this podcast and all my teaching. I'm not the only one who harps on this as a professor, because Gustavus, other profs elsewhere as well. But enough already with this idea that you have to have it all figured out at 18 or 19, especially in the current world. It's crazy. And part of what happens is, it kind of happened to you maybe after graduating, is, oh, you mean I can actually do this for a living? You know, what you what you've been told or thought you couldn't possibly do, whether it's writing or art or whatever it is. What about... So you were also involved, I noted, you were involved in something called the Leadership Development Group or organization at Gustavus. I didn't know.
I think it was like
ongoing leadership or something.
Honestly, it got me like a $1,500 stipend.
Okay. I was not aware of that. That's why I'm asking. Yeah. So you don't have any memories of what that involved?
No, I actually kind of do, because it was like, so I worked at this that church camp I was telling you about in the summer. Right. So I was like my summer job, and that like did not pay well. So there was like, I don't know how I found, my mom probably found it. It was like some sort of thing. If you join this club, like and you have some sort of like low paying but community serving job, it would like knock off some money on my tuition. So I did that, and honestly, I went to it like just trying to get the money, but it was kind of stuff I was interested in. And it's funny, like when you look back now and the things that you do have like saved from college, like I have like my little box of college stuff. I have a folder from that, and you know, there's a bunch of like Myers-Briggs tests and all those sort of things, but then really kind of like applying them and doing that. So that it did, honestly, it was probably one of the things I was like somewhat academically like intrigued in, even though it wasn't a literal class at Gustavus.
Well, it sounds interesting to me. I'm really fascinated by leadership. Was it, for one thing, that's one reason it interests me. But as I said, I hadn't heard of it. Was it run by Gustavus faculty or?
Yeah. Well, does the Center for Vocational Reflection still exist?
Out of that center. Yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was called.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, that's neat. Do you feel anything you remember you learned there that you find yourself applying or using?
Just honestly, just like the exercise of like reflecting on what you want to do vocationally.
Sure.
Which I guess should probably be a really big part of college, but I guess I kind of in hindsight find frustration in that, like, we spend so much time in college trying to learn these, you know, these skills or something from classes, rather than learning about where we're going to apply them.
Yeah.
And I think that exercise, again, for a 18, 19 year old is pretty important, because we just kind of, our whole life with academics from elementary school, high school is just kind of this like treadmill, right? Of like, just keep walking down this path and you'll get to, you know, you'll get to the next step, which is high school, which is then college.
Right.
And I think like we can do that with college too, but at some point it kind of slaps you in the face when it's like, well, you graduate from college and there's not another treadmill to get onto. So we need some guidance.
And you don't want to be on the unemployment treadmill, that's for sure.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a great center and an alum. I can't remember how much he's given a lot of money to develop that center even more since you graduated. And also, I don't know if you are involved in this, but you can be, is a really strong mentoring program now through that center, which is helpful, pretty cool, with alums, you know, mentoring current students to address exactly what you're talking about. Are there other experiences, academic or co-curriculars, we say, from your time at Gustavus that you'd like to?
Yeah, honestly, one was huge.
Yeah,
it was, so Professor Jeff Owen was,
one of my students. Jeff was a history major, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Econ and history. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He was my, advisor and he taught a class, spring of my junior year, called The Economics of Sports.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, honestly, the first time ever where I was like really academically fascinated, with the topic, because it wasn't just like reading about sports. It was like applying economic principles to sports and having that, like it's the one class I ever, you know, sat in the front row, asked questions all the time, did that sort of thing, because I had been taking, you know, 2.5 years prior to that economics courses and kind of like, okay, like supply and demand, blah, blah, blah. But once I could apply it to something that I had some interest and some background in, it really helped. And at the same time, I was taking a labor economics class with Larry Wohl.
Larry Wohl, yeah, who's now retired, recently retired. Great, great. Yeah, excellent. Go ahead.
He was tough. He was a tough professor, but he was very helpful in this, that those two let me work together to put my two kind of, like, it's kind of like capstone, I guess, of my academic thing, like this big paper that applied, the economics of sports to unionization in
That's great.
The economics of labor. And it was right at this time when the NBA's like collective bargaining agreement, where like the players union and the league kind of negotiate all this stuff to figure out how much everyone's getting paid, what the rules of the league are all going to all be. And so the NBA was in this lockout trying to figure this like all out, the economics of the NBA, the unionization of the NBA. So the timing was really perfect. And I wrote this paper kind of combining those two factors together, and then ended up getting it published with Professor Owen.
That's fantastic.
It was like the one thing I was ever really into.
But that's,
in school.
That's awesome. Congrats on the publication. I'm, as Larry Wohl knows, and maybe Jeff too, but I'm a labor historian, I guess, by training, more intellectual history of labor, working people. Anyway, but what, just a number of things are occurring to me as you're telling that story, which is great. It's kind of a classic liberal arts and classic Gustavus experience. Sure. You hope every student has, where you're, own interest in something, right, intersects with quote unquote academic. I sat in on, I remember when I was observing one of Jeff's, maybe he was coming up for tenure or promotion. I was observing one, that was the class I sat in on. And it was at the time of the stadium controversy, the Viking stadium controversy. And since I live only a few blocks away, I was like you, man. I don't know if I was in the front row, but I was listening to every word he was saying about the economics of stadiums and all. My memory is I didn't leave hopeful or optimistic. But anyway, that's another story. but so there's that part of what you said, and then just that sports, right? They involve, I mean, it's entertainment, but it's also business, right? It's economics, and players do go on strike and they unionize, are unionized. So all that stuff is interesting. And I should note here that in come back to Gustavus and you can take some courses with our newest colleague in the history department, Professor Kay Aguilar, who does sports history, does awesome work on that. And it's just all extremely, you know, I mean, sports is a microcosm, right, of so much stuff, including labor, capital, you know, worker, employee.
Right. And you kind of think that it's just like, you think of sports kind of just as a toy, right?
Exactly.
And it's not. It is a vehicle for a ton of different things.
That's right. Business, I mean, you can, yeah.
Cool. Like it's a whole, it touches everything.
Exactly.
You know, culturally and politically. And it really is, it's not a toy.
That's exactly right.
It's an avenue, right?
Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, I first learned that when I guess I was early in graduate school and heard a Latin American historian giving a paper, I think it was about soccer in Brazil or Argentina. Yeah. I was like, wow. And it was all about the cultural history of the game and the politics of the game. Yeah. So all true. That's wonderful. I'm happy about that story and that you got that published with Jeff. So you do graduate.
I do.
you stay at Gustavus. We're happy about that. Tell us a little bit about what you did between graduating and when did you launch the podcast in 2020? Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah. Well, I honestly, the plan was law school. Okay. But I talked to Professor Owen, Kathy Thunheim was a professor of mine there.
Still there, another prof as in well. The econ department. Yep.
Yeah. And I remember having a conversation with her and she kind of like talked me out of doing it right away. After like not doing the jump right into law school,
sure,
sort of thing, and she's like, just do something for a little while, and you know, and like experience the workforce a little bit before you go back. You're not going to be behind in law school, and that was accurate. Like,
not at all, right?
A lot of people don't go to law school until you know plenty of years after,
correct?
Yeah, after college, and so I kind of like, I was interviewing for, you know, some like entry level finance jobs and stuff like that. And like, none of them, like the only way they would be attractive is in the sense that like, okay, if I got on that track and stayed on it, you know, then I could grow over the course of, you know, 5-10 years or something like that.
Right.
But I knew it wasn't what I wanted to be doing for 5 or 10 years. So I was like, well, like, let's just kind of do something for a year or two that, you know, you just kind of enjoy. And in that time, you know, study for the LSAT and try and get into law school, yada, yada, yada. And, so I worked, for a nonprofit through a church, running high school youth programming. And I ran an after school program where I bring, had high school kids volunteering, in North Minneapolis.
Well,
kind of
cool.
Ran that all these sort of service-based projects in Minneapolis. And yeah, I was like, I'm going to do that. It was like a year became 2 years. And that's really when I was like, then I was taking the LSAT and, you know, took it, started the application process and really, I was auditing classes at University of Minnesota, and I was like, "This is not what I want to do." and honestly, was scared about the idea of like going and being like, "Oh, well, what if I go for a year or two to law school and quit, or decide I don't want to do it, and now I've racked up all this additional debt without you know?" So it just kind of, I was kind of just a little lost in what I wanted to do, because all I knew was what I didn't want to do.
Well said.
Yeah.
Very important though. It's very important to know what you don't want to do.
it was, I'm very glad I did, you know, I did not do that, but it left me kind of in this rut of like, okay, you know, what is the next thing? I stayed at that job I was at through the church for a couple more years. And then I was like, well, I'm not going to do anything different until I stop doing this. So I had started writing at a Timberwolves blog my last year when I was at that job.
Okay.
And because I kind of like my whole like post-college career, I kind of always had this sort of side hustle thing going on where for a while it was like studying for law school and doing that stuff. And now I knew I didn't want to do that. And so I had this extra amount of time to kind of invest in something else. So I just invested in that. I'm just doing this, like writing for this, this Timberwolves blog called Canis Hoopus.
Oh yeah.
And I saw started getting some traction on, you know, some of the stuff I was writing there. And I was like, well, you know, I could just, what if I just tried to do this and try to start doing, you know, freelance writing, knowing I wasn't going to have a full-time job right away. But I just quit my job and I sold my car and was like, I'm going to try and see if I can get, you know, freelance writing stuff for a year and kind of see if that has any traction. And if not, I'll have to go, I don't know, back to school or get a finance job or whatever.
But the only way you know is to try it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did get just enough traction, and I started exclusively writing about the Timberwolves for a platform called Zone Coverage Minnesota here.
Right. I wanted to ask you about Zone Coverage. So that's Minnesota. Okay. I had not heard of that until I was looking into your background. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, it was a place that would pay me to write, pay me a little bit to write about basketball. And so that was kind of enough at that time. And I mean, the biggest thing when you want to get into the media field is you need to be taken seriously. You need to get a media credential to be able to go to the games, go to the practices, be a member of the media. So that's why I needed to do the freelance stuff. I needed a place that would credential me.
Yes,
that
it was, yes.
I wasn't just Dane Moore.
Right.
I want to come to the games and write about it. I'm like, the Timberwolves aren't going to let me in to do that. You need to be writing.
Yeah, that's a really important point, which actually I hadn't thought much about. Right. You had to become a media person. Yeah. With a credential. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you did. So you did through the writing and Zone Coverage.
Yes, I did. And then that was kind of like, Zone Coverage was pretty new at that time and like had these aspirations of growth. And I was like, well, you know, I'll try and grow with it. And that'll eventually turn into like a full-time job, as you know, and I can help it grow and we can get there. And then I won't have to have my writing in six different places and it'll all be that. And it was honestly, it was a grind because it didn't get there. it got to 20. In 2020, I got like, quote unquote, put on the, like a full-time salary. I started doing it in 2017. Okay. And so 2020, like, is when I got to quote unquote full-time. And then, you know, sure enough, like 2 months and like 10 days later, the world shuts down. And, you know, COVID hits.
Right.
And I got laid off. And so I was like, wow, you maybe just really wasted your entire 20s, like kind of like ambling about, thinking about law school, trying to write, like, and it was scary, but it was honestly the best thing that happened to me because I, at that time, as you know, we all were just kind of stuck and not really, I mean, there weren't a lot of other jobs to go out there and apply for to get because we were just, you know, really economically locked down. But part of being kind of like locked down was life was a little less expensive. So I was like, all right, like, you know, one last shot at this. I'm going to start my own business, my own like media company, very small. It's just me, but just go all in on, you know, trying to independently monetize my content and the podcasting I'd figured out was the most easily monetizable one. And I kind of started to build at least a small audience at that point. And I partnered with this Blue Wire company who I contract for now. And so I had some means to be like, okay, if you get X amount of downloads, you can, on the show, you know, you can live on this, or try to.
Right.
And so I just went all in. I was doing like 20, 25 shows a month. We're also, again, trapped at home. So
that's a lot.
I was just trying to make that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was just trying to make that pile really big. I did them after like the night after every game. And we were doing all our interviews with the players and coaches over Zoom at that time. So it was kind of like, figuring it all out technologically and all those sort of things, and turning it into, turning into a very consistent podcast. And it was ended up being like the best thing I did, because
it's so cool. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. It was, I mean, in the journalism industry, it's like pretty much all of us who work for a newspaper or whatever, you're just kind of contracted at your salary.
Right.
And there's no real bonuses in that industry for, for how good or how bad you are at it. But when you're independent, what I love about it is if it works, it's my fault. And if it doesn't work, it's my fault. And so it kind of, whatever I was going to make, I was going to get. And then I'd be able to invest that into the business and grow and do more things with it. And, I think just kind of where we are at, in the journalism industry, kind of struggling
exactly.
as it is,
yeah, exactly.
This is kind of, made it another possible path to take as a journalist.
It's just a great story because, again, your story isn't, I went and I majored and I went into this world and I'm there now. It's full of twists and turns and, what ifs. I mean, what if the pandemic hadn't happened, right? Who knows?
For real.
But, the other thing that's so cool about the podcast, you obviously know this, it brings together everything, right? It brings together your love of basketball, your mm-hmm. writing, because you do have to write. People may not realize that, when you're doing a podcast, there's some writing involved. You are doing business. You're an mm-hmm. entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just all there in a really neat way. And I wanted to ask you, so it sounds like, tell us a little bit about how the Blue Wire works. So do they finance the thing, or do you have to raise money, or it's listener contributions, all of the above?
They just provide ads, and they provide the audio production. So it's basically, we just have an ad revenue split where... Okay. They get X amount of dollars per 1,000 listens, and okay. we split that. And so it's theoretically mutually beneficial, I guess. For because they have hundreds of people like me on their network.
Okay.
And that's their business. But that was really helpful for me at the time because, then I didn't have to pay for an audio technician. I didn't have to do all my sales
right.
of my ads independently.
Sure.
And so being a one-man operation, it wasn't a one-man operation, right?
Right.
They kind of put in the business infrastructure for me
yes.
to be able to be like, okay, this is actually how, because I mean, like you said, it is a business, it's entrepreneurial. Right. You need to have an idea of what your earning setup is going to be to be able to decide, because it's not just a check that comes every 2 weeks. It's it's different. So, it started with that, and then now I sell my own ads on top of that.
Okay.
With local partnerships, some bigger national ones as well too, and basically those companies, if you have big enough of a show, that's what they're trying to hit. And particularly the people who listen to my show are, generally speaking, they think 25 to 50 year old men.
The sweet spot, right? For marketers.
Yes. Which they say they really struggle to hit. So I think it's worked for the advertisers as well.
It's worked for you too, obviously, and the listeners. Yeah. And I've listened to just some of it because it was only recently that one of the guys I had breakfast with, who's a serious basketball fan and Timberwolves fan, didn't grow up here, grew up in Missouri, I think. But anyway, mentioned, if you heard of Dane Moore, he's a Gustavus graduate. I said, what? Who has a podcast? And I started listening. Oh my God, it's the real deal. And it's unique. It's distinctive. I mean, you've got your own, niche in the podcast world there. The other thing I think that's cool about it is that, again, I said this already, I guess, but you how you came to this sort of it wasn't a plan. You didn't set out to be, you did not, just to underscore this, especially for younger listeners or potential prospective students, you didn't set out to be a podcaster, right? I mean, you know, most people.
No, I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to be a writer.
But the thing I like about it, I think this is true of anyone who's savvy and has had, you know, I guess you can do this, sure, you can do this without a formal liberal arts education, but I think a good liberal arts education helps one to be ready to seize opportunities, to be resilient. And, you know, you had.
Well, I think honestly, the stuff I did with Professor Owen was huge because it like,
sure.
That was, I mean, I really had to study the entire collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
And that was kind of my, I mean, I had a basketball background, but I was kind of like,
right
when I started blogging, you know, you want to pick your niche to stick out a little bit. And I happen to have a really like in-depth understanding of the collective bargaining agreement,
exactly.
Which is actually it's such actually a big part of sports and intrigue.
Huge.
Exactly. The money, the salary cap, how trades work, like, and fans love that stuff.
Exactly, you right. Know? Literally,
yes.
Yeah. Taking the words out of my mouth, honest to God, because mm-hmm. Yeah, what if you'd come to it just with, well, you know, I know the plays, I know the players, I know, yeah. But not that. Yeah. Yeah, then you're missing, well, more than half of what it's about.
Know anything about how to interview people, how to be like a jerk. Like, I had no idea what I was doing when it came to like, I was like, oh, so the coach comes here and I need to bring a recorder and we stand by. Like, my whole first year I was doing it, I'd say it was my internship, because I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know where to go. It was crazy.
I hear you. And mine is a lot simpler than yours, and a lot less intimidating. But I had no, I mean, I didn't even know what a podcast was until another friend told me to start listening to them. And I listened to them on the way, you know, commuting from the Twin Cities to Gustavus and back. Right. Well, the podcast is about the Wolves. So let's mm-hmm. talk in the time remaining about the Wolves. I think one of the things you're good at is kind of assessing, and I realize this could be a whole podcast episode in itself, but if you give us kind of your thumbnail assessment of the state of the Timberwolves right now, right? So they yeah. lost in the first round of the playoffs. And listening to the guys at breakfast, I guess that wasn't unexpected. I don't know. They kept saying, well, even if they win, they're not going to win the next round. But in any case, in the draft coming up, what's your take on the team, its strengths and weaknesses, challenges at this point in time?
Well, they're honestly in a very different place than they've been any of my time covering it. Like when I started, they're terrible. And like, and not only losing a lot, but just extremely dysfunctional.
Oh yes.
Like some people know, like the whole, like the Jimmy Butler practice,
yes.
Like I was at that,
okay.
And like, that was just, that was like my first year doing it. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm covering a soap opera.
Yeah. Just briefly tell us about, I mean, I know about that from the breakfast group, but just briefly, what was the Butler saga briefly? I mean, just functionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Locker room stuff, just a whole mess, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just this Tom Thibodeau coach had been brought in to like professionalize the team, and he had a track record of winning, and he kind of came in it, and they had this one year in 2017-18 where they did win, and that was my first year kind of doing the writing part of it, and I was like, oh, this is like good, they're winning, they never win. And then then I started actually being like credentialed the next year, and I was at every game, every practice and all that, and that's when the soap opera started, where Butler, their best player, like demanded a trade, and it was just drama, drama, drama,
yeah.
For like that whole year. People are getting fired left and right. They hired a new coach, Ryan Saunders, who had, his dad was the most successful coach in Timberwolves history, and so that was like exciting. And then that failed.
Flip Saunders, right?
Flip Saunders,
yeah.
Yeah.
So
they were just bad.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, again, only in preparing for the podcast did I realize how bad they've been actually mm-hmm. over the years. I mean, how few winning seasons, at least in the last 15 or so years, how few winning seasons they've had. They have been in the playoffs before, though, right? This wasn't the first time.
Yeah. So it was 2004, and then they didn't go back until that 2017-18 season, okay. Which was like, oh, we're done being terrible. And then it just kind of blows up all over again until this season, which was, they made the playoffs again. So only the second time since 2004 that they've made the playoffs. And it's actually pretty easy to make the playoffs in the NBA. Like 16 of the 30 teams make it. So it's, right. it's almost like kind of hard to lose a coin flip that many times in a row. But they found a way to do that. So honestly, this year was just so, it was so different in that it was, I felt like, every game mattered to cover. So much of like the previous few years was like, okay, this is what's happening with the team right now. They have these young players. What might they be 2-3 years down the road once this team becomes relevant again?
Right.
Which was, I kind of enjoyed, you know, some of that, or maybe I just told myself I had to because it's all that's all that there was there to write or talk about. But this year was a blast. Being able to be like it mattered. They seemed like a less dysfunctional organization again. And then just over time too, like my connections within the organization, relationships with the players and that had kind of come to grow. It was kind of hard initially with the Timberwolves public relations staff. If it's kind of like, wait, who is this guy? He was like a blogger. And now he's like, he has a podcast. Are we sure we need to let him be here sort of thing? But now I feel very, ingrained in it.
And 400 and, some episodes later or something.
Yeah, like, right.
They're inviting you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all cool. So I'm glad to hear you say it was a blast. That's good. I like that. As opposed to misery. Overall, is the idea that the team would, ideally only improve as players age, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this Anthony Edwards kid.
Right.
He doesn't turn 21 until August.
He's so young.
He's already been on the team for 2 years, but he's really got this. I mean, he's got that upside potential that is real, where he could become one of the best players in the league over time. And so that hope is valuable, I think, for the fan base and honestly, just for somebody covering it, that, the trajectory is always looking upward.
Long
as he's here. But they also have other good players on the team now, too, that makes them, even though he hasn't kind of like hatched, so to say, the other players are good enough surrounding him that they were a team that was able to make the playoffs. They made, they made a little bit of noise in the playoffs. And now you're kind of at the part, which is difficult after a year like this, where you exceeded expectations. Well, I mean, the bar for the next season is going to be to exceed what you did the year prior.
Right.
And there's a little bit of pressure that comes with that, but pressure that I think is reasonable to assume that they, that they could get, with some internal development, maybe adding some other players.
Well,
they just made a big change in the front office where they have this new president of basketball operations.
That's
they
Conley,
seem like
right?
a real team again. Yes.
Tim Conley. Let's talk. I wanted to ask you about Chris Finch, the coach. First of all, what's your assessment of him? Good job coming back, I assume.
Yeah. Well, that one was crazy too, because he took over in the middle of the pandemic season when we were doing all our interviews on Zoom because we couldn't be around people because it was a pandemic. And so you normally as a journalist develop a pretty like intimate relationship with the like people you're covering, particularly the coach. You talk to them, you do the interviews with them every single day. And none of us had met him, so all our interactions were through this. So I honestly kind of thought of him as kind of like a curmudgeon at the beginning. And now after having the chance, I've covered him every day and, gone and got beers and stuff like that with him. You kind of have like, you're like, oh, like I actually know what you're like to communicate with. And he's just an extremely, professional sports. And I think money plays a huge role in this. It's like, those coaches and those players, quite frankly, are just like in an extremely different economic bracket
we
are. They're famous, or even outside of money, right? They're just famous people.
Right.
So it's like,
yeah, they're celebrities who are also extraordinarily wealthy. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So there's you kind of got to get over. Typically, it's hard to kind of get over that hump of like, well, we just have pretty different lives. But Finch is just an extremely normal dude. Like he grinded his whole life coaching overseas and all these like low level assistant jobs, and he just got it. He got his. Didn't get his first head coaching job till he's 51 years old. So, wow. he kind of like, you know, he's a little bit more grassroots, and that's been easier to, you know, to work with and have a relationship with. And, you know, he's come on my show, and just to be somebody you feel a little bit more comfortable communicating with, because there's, right. I don't know, the playing field feels, I guess, a little bit more level, just in the way that he is.
Right. You're more relatable. What's the I want to get to Tim Connelly in a second, but before that, what's the relationship between Finch and the players? A positive overall? I really don't know. I'm just asking. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, he's white dude, old white dude. Right. And obviously the NBA is predominantly black, and I really respect his ability. I mean, like I was saying, to me, like, he's just relatable to anyone. Like, he finds a way to be relatable to me. And so I use that to be like, oh, you're able to relate to this 20-year-old kid from Atlanta, Anthony Edwards, because you just have very good relatability skills, where, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, finding common ground, whatever it might be, just being normal, being himself, seems to connect to all the guys. They swear by him, and he hasn't been there that long.
Yeah. So it really does seem like his, I know partly from observing, you know, reading the sports pages, but also from this breakfast group I'm with, that drama, right. Associated with the butler. I mean, that's, seems to be gone. I mean, the team seems to be in a better place. I don't want to say calmer, maybe that's, if that's the right word, but more, I guess, was there some stuff with Edwards and his behavior? I can't remember this season.
Well, no, there was the thing that happened after that, after the Butler thing, is they hired this new president of basketball operations, Gerson Rosas, to kind of be like the stabilizer and be like, okay, let's put the Butler stuff and all that behind us. We're going to start anew. And he was he was running the show for 2 years. And then about this time last year, he got fired for an inappropriate in-office relationship. And so that was just a whole other like spark on the fire, right? Where it's like, oh, here we go again. Timberwolves dysfunctional, right. Made a bad hire.
Okay.
All these sort of things. So it really, like, the chaos stayed. Like it didn't go away. And now this feels, again, I'm covering the team for 5 years. This is the most normal it's it's felt. And it's a credit to the people who are running the show. Like we said, you know, Chris Finch, I'd say Carl Anthony Towns' leadership. He's been here through all that. Sachin Gupta ran the show for a while after Rosas did. And now they just hired this Tim Connelly guy who has a, you know, pretty extensive track record of being a high level executive. So in theory, you know, you never want to count your chickens with Timberwolves, but right. Like, it seems like they're moving in a direction that is functional.
That's
historically being an organization that has not been that.
And, I mean, fingers crossed about Connelly comes from the Nuggets. Is that right? Where he was operating.
I just had him on the show. That's, I think, as we're recording.
I
this
saw
right
that.
Now,
I did not. I did see that. I listened to just a few minutes of it, actually. The other thing, I mean, what's his $40 million for him over 5 years or something?
That ties into the ownership. Like, we should mention that too. That
right.
Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie bought the team again about this time last year. And so they're now just starting to kind of put their fingerprints on the organization, and those fingerprints are dollar signs. So,
well said.
You know, they're trying to you know, buy talent. And that is, we were talking about the collective bargaining agreement before. You have a limit of how much money you can spend on players. There's not a limit to how much you can spend on executives. So, you know, they paid out 5 years, $40 million. They gave him a share of equity right. in the organization because they, I mean, this Mark Laurie guy was the CEO of Walmart for a while. And like, he has these, he calls them his five core principles or values or whatever. And one of them is just hiring the best people.
The best.
And so they paid out big time to get him, but Connelly, I mean, that's no guarantee it's going to work, but again, Connelly has a track record. He was the president of basketball operations in Denver for 9 years. He drafted Nikola Jokic, who has won the MVP the past two seasons. So he has a track record of doing it, but he also has a personality very similar to Chris Finch.
Oh, that's
just
good.
Kind of a plain spoken, normal dude. Which I think it goes a long way in this industry of
right.
a whole bunch of different personalities and types of people. Like, I like the strategy of just being yourself and being smart while you do it. But
right.
like, there's not a lot of acting there.
And yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there's something
there's to be typically said. A lot of acting.
You yeah, know that's what I mean? That's with, all. With that, all I think guys. That's really important. It's true in academia, true in anything. But yeah, enough already with the you need some. Yeah, you need stability, right? You need to be mm-hmm. functional. And it sounds like, well, Chris mm-hmm. Finch, certainly the coach, but also Conley are going to be crucial to that and playing positive roles in that regard.
Yeah, so, I think fans should be really excited.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's cool. What about now you talked about kind of moving, you used the word, I think, moving earlier. So the draft is coming up. What's your advice? Who should stay, go, come, whatever?
I think they're at this point where they have this Anthony Edwards kid who should become a superstar in the league. You have Karl Anthony Towns, who is, I think, a fringe superstar right now. So you kind of have those as your two, I think, core pieces. The next best player on the team is D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
Who is a very good player, but he's paid like a star player. So that's kind of the talk in Timberwolves world right now is, are they going to keep him or are they going to try and he makes like $31 million a year. Are they going to try and turn that $31 million into something else? Because, a lot of people don't think he's quote unquote, worth that. So that's kind of the big, like, internal change that might happen, but also they just got to get a little bit older. They got to add a couple more veteran pieces. They got four picks coming up in this draft later this month. So there's a lot of room to kind of retool, I guess, around Towns and Edwards and maybe Russell.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
But I think that's kind of what fans or myself is looking at, because like we said before, I don't know. I mean, if they just ran it back again next year, I'm not sure they'd win the same amount of games as they did, right. Or it'd be hard for me to be like, yeah, if you just run it back, you're going to go from 46 to 50 wins. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they probably need to make changes and the right changes to kind of hit that next step. And there's still a handful of steps away from becoming a real contender, but you kind of got to do your due diligence over the course of the way. These teams don't in the NBA. It's just nobody just, it's not like football where kind of a random team can win the Super Bowl. Like the team that's going to win the championship in the NBA, you kind of knew they were in the mix going into the season because they'd been building. They've been kind of, peaking at the right time. And I think the Wolves are still, a handful of years away from that, even in the most, green pastures, a couple years away from that, but you can't mess up your moves along the way there.
But
which is what they've done their whole history. They've anytime they've gotten traction, it's been a fumble.
That's I know you're going to join us for breakfast. I think on the 21, whatever, and I appreciate that. But yeah, that's the talk at the table, right. Definitely mm-hmm. about the Wolves. Now, speaking of that's all quite interesting. Thank you. Speaking of, we'll hope things go well in the draft. Speaking of playoffs, you have a favorite Celtics or Warriors? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I had the Warriors before the series. I think we're just in this like really interesting place in the NBA right now where like 10 years ago, it was this whole super team thing when LeBron, when he was in Miami, it was kind of like, okay, I just need me and like two other stars and then everybody else can be, fringe NBA players. And if we have the three stars, we'll be good enough. And I think what's really cool about like the NBA these past 2 years with the Bucks and Suns going to the championship last year and the Warriors and the Celtics, it's a lot more team oriented. Like, Giannis won it last year. He's very good, but I don't know, the second best player on the team probably isn't a top 20 player in the league. So you kind of need to have this, you need to have a team, a group to be able to do it. And I think that's what we're seeing again with the Warriors this year and the Celtics to some degree too, where it's this collective group effort. So it makes it makes, I mean, Steph Curry, he's the best player out there.
But even like, I know that. Yeah. My God.
But I don't know. I think it makes it a little bit more fun. And honestly, as a Timberwolves fan or somebody, you know, who's following a quote unquote smaller market team, that isn't just going to be able to like pay out the wazoo. Like you can, you know, you can, you, it's this new idea of let's just build a good team together rather than being hyper-focused on needing to have, you know, three all-stars on the same team, which is cool. I think it makes this little mini era of basketball we're in right now more attractive.
Yeah. And it goes back to, we've kind of come full circle because it goes back to what you were saying at the start about, you know, when I asked you what attracted you to the game and just seeing all the parts and those are the players, right? Working together and moving together. And so that's interesting. I just learned something, because I didn't know any of that. And you're leaving me hopeful. I'm you know, as I said, I want them to win. I don't really follow them that closely, but I do want them to win because I live here. So you're making me feel better. Final question, and it's back to Gustavus. What's your pitch for Gustavus? You've talked about the place. I mean, if you had to speak to a prospective student, what would you say?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think like the whole college proposition has changed a little bit since when I was in 2008, when I was graduating high school and looking at college. I think we're in a different economic reality. I think we're in a reality that you don't have to go to college or necessarily to have the what you want to become.
That's right.
But I think it's okay to be 18 years old and not know what you want to do. I actually think people are crazy when they say, "Oh, I've picked the perfect school for me and the perfect major for me, and I'm 18 years old and I know what it's all." No, you do not. Nobody knows that. And I think some people kind of, you know, shoot themselves in the foot by entering with that mentality. There's thousands of colleges you could go to. I think with Gustavus though, there's some open-endedness to it. Like I said, I mean, the brief anecdote for me that was proved to be pretty huge for me professionally was just this idea that Professor Owen and Professor Wohl, because you know, both of the classes I was in probably had, you know, under 25 kids in them. Like, there's no way if I'm at the University of Minnesota, they're like, okay, let's us two professors, we're going to work together to help this one kid. You know, there's just too many kids. So I think that helped a lot. The small size helped me professionally. If I'm being honest, I think there's part of me that wishes I would have got out of Minnesota for a while and experienced a different place. But again, there's not this perfect answer. I don't think there is a perfect answer for kids going to school. I found in Gustavus a really good answer for me because I had a couple things that worked out academically, and also like I met really good people there that I think wherever you go to college, those people are going to have a profound impact on who you're going to become, at least as a young adult, you know, and in Gustavus, I feel confident, at least in my time there, that the type of people in the environment there were, I don't know, kind of helped spark that figuring out who and what I wanted to be. And they were just strong, lasting relationships, which I think is a very Minnesotan thing. I have friends who did go out across the country to college and, you know, they had their own good and fun experiences and maybe the school was bigger and maybe their team went to the Rose Bowl or something, but now they're back in Minneapolis and it's like, they don't have those same connections with those people. And it'd be kind of, I think like people who go out of state, it's kind of like they leave college and they're like, oh, those are my college friends. And that's in the past. Like a handful of my college friends are just my friends now, you know, they're the people in my life. And I think the fact that happened that it was in Minnesota and it was here, you know, that went a long way for me.
And I agree. I went to, you're describing me really the other kind. I mean, I went to a big university and I loved it. I got a great education. I just loved it, but I have never been back. I don't feel, you know, a strong pull to it. I don't have friends from those years. That's certainly true of Gustavus. I mean, that's really one of the hallmarks of Gustavus. There's the place, the physical place. But then there are these relationships that continue among Gusties for God knows, I mean, for lifelong, really. So listen, thank you so much. Congrats on the podcast. I look forward to getting together in person for breakfast. It'll be a nice treat for the guys. I'll email you a reminder about that. And I've learned a lot already about you, which was fun, and also about the Timberwolves and basketball. And fingers crossed for the draft in the upcoming season. Right. And again, congratulations. Thanks for making the time. And I'll see you shortly. I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Dane. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yes, you too.
Thanks. Learning for Life at Gustavus is produced by J.J. Aiken and Matthew Dobosensky of the Gustavus Office of Marketing, Gustavus graduate Will Clark, class of 20, who also provides technical expertise to the podcast, and me. The views expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of Gustavus Adolphus College.